Well, hello there. Welcome to the Good Old Days of Radio show. This is John Tefteller, your host. We are on episode number 6 in a series of 10 shows, all as a salute to the novelist and short story writer Cornell Woolrich. He's been referred to as a modern-day Edgar Allan Poe, and he wrote a lot of very interesting stories. And we've featured 5 of them so far. Today is number 6. Today is a show that I heard a long time ago when I made an initial transfer from the transcription discs at being held by Pacific Pioneer Broadcasters at that time. I did not hear the very first time this was done, and Dr. Joe Webb is going to tell us that it was done before the one I heard, but I heard the second time it was done, because it was 1944. It's called The Night Reveals, and it's if you have any interest in a story about a pyromaniac, boy, this one is for you. So, welcome to the Good Old Days of Radio show, Dr. Joe Webb. Tell us about The Night Reveals, and we'll find out when we hear the show what it actually reveals. But for now, what can you reveal?
I'm happy to be back, and this time, there's nothing like arson and pyromania to drive an interesting story here. This is not one of those Woolrich stories where everything goes wrong all at once. This is one where we don't know who the culprit is, and it's going to be a real surprise at the end when we finally learn that. And he was also very big on psychological twists to the story, so we're going to get some of that here as well. This script was used a few times on Suspense. It was the first Cornell Woolrich script done on the show, and that was back in March 1943, but no copy of that exists. That starred Robert Young, you know, from Father Knows Best and Marcus Welby. Yes. And it's interesting when Suspense repeated their scripts. A lot of the scripts that were done before the Roma sponsorship were repeated very early on during the Roma years, because the show got a much better time slot and more people were available to hear these scripts than there were before when it had no sponsor. So this was one of the shows that they did right away, even though it was just 9 months earlier that it was on the air. The adaptation is by Sigmund Miller, who I believe did a lot of work with on Inner Sanctum. And this particular one stars Frederick March. And in it, you're going to hear Jeanette Nolan, who was a Suspense regular. You'll also hear John Daner. And by this time, this is the Autolite-sponsored show. So you hear Paul Frees, whom so many of us know from a lot of the Jay Ward cartoons of Bullwinkle and all.
And the Haunted Mansion at Disneyland.
Yes, exactly. And you also hear the commercials that have Bill Johnstone in them. So this is where Harlow Wilcox is the announcer, and Bill Johnstone, who was a terrific radio actor, who I thought was the best shadow of that entire series, better than Wells. He had it for a year after Wells, but Bill Johnstone had a marvelous Hollywood career and also early television career. He plays Hap, where they do their little skits about how good Autolite parts are for your car. So that's at the beginning of the show. And this stars Frederick March, who's a famous actor, of course. Now, the topic here is fire, and I think a lot of modern listeners don't understand the fear of fire that people had 75 years ago, prior to...
Because of the Chicago fire?
No, prior to good fire prevention technologies that are required in most buildings today. There was always a concern about fire. I mean, today, every place has a smoke alarm of some sort. There are sprinkler systems in all modern buildings. Very rare to find a building that doesn't have some kind of sprinkler system, even apartments now. But at the time of this story, there would be regular news items about people being losing their homes and losing their businesses by fire. If you go through newspapers of that day, of the 1940s and earlier, you see it's a fairly common occurrence. But even the firefighting techniques that were done on the site of a fire are much better today. So between that and now, our abilities to detect arson is much greater. This story has to be understood in the context prior to all those technologies going on. So the people
back when the days when fire was much more common. Okay,
exactly. So when people heard this story, it was something that would strike a nerve more than it would today.
Okay, it's interesting you say that, because as I mentioned earlier, I heard this 40 years ago, back in the late 70s when I was making transfers at Pacific Pioneer Broadcasters, and it didn't impress me that much back then. I just thought, okay, whatever. It just didn't. It didn't hit me. And then when I listened to it the other day in preparation for doing this series with you, I appreciated it a whole lot more. I thought, oh, this is really well done and really well written. So I don't know if it has anything to do with the fire part of it, but it just hit me differently now at the age of 65 than it did back when I was 20-something in the late 70s.
Yeah. One other thing to note about Woolwich's work, a lot of the addresses are not real addresses in New York City, but the street names are generally real. For instance, a lot of this occurs in Manhattan. There is no 340 East 98th Street, but there is one in Brooklyn and Queens. Okay, yep, so right. As you go through the different things that he mentions, I'm always whenever I have a script and I know that it is from an author from that particular town, I try to find out if they used particular locations that were familiar to them. And for instance, in Casey Crime Photographer, I found a number of situations related to where the writer Alonzo Dean Cole lived, or places he would encounter on his trips and on the train into New York City and stuff like that. It's interesting, but Woolrich was not specific in that way. But you would know what he was talking about from those kinds of things. There's a chemical mentioned in the story. It's sodium amytal. It is a hypnotic and a sedative that plays a role in the story. A lot of the script writers were afraid of, especially today, afraid of naming particular medicines in their stories. And at this time, they would name real things all the time. And Johnny Dollar, for example, Jack Johnstone would create fake medicines or fake chemicals just not to have any kind of legal issues.
Okay. But well, a lot of the pharmaceutical companies are creating fake medicines every day. So we will just avoid that from here on out. Okay.
Yes. Now this story was originally published in Story Magazine. Yes, stories were in Story Magazine back in April 1936.
Okay. Well, I've noticed, just to digress a little bit again, I've noticed in this series when we've been doing these shows with you, Dr. Joe, you're throwing out all these names of magazines that no longer exist, and they have some interesting titles, and I'm like, wow, there's a lot of, I guess it would be called pulp fiction. Is that the word?
The pulps were so big, magazines
we just don't see anywhere today. Nobody reads anymore, or if they do, they certainly don't read magazines. So interesting that the country was filled with all these different, especially crime-related magazines that described all these weird stories of murder and mayhem that Cornell Woolrich was writing, and other writers as well.
That is true. When you see some of the places where he published, we're going to have one coming up soon. You'll never believe where the story was first published.
Okay. Well, I'll let you tease us for that for another week down the road here. But for now, are we ready to go with the night reveals?
We are all set.
Okay. May 26th, 1949, CBS Radio Network. This is a show that had been produced multiple times on suspense. I liked this one, I think, even better than the one I heard years ago, as I mentioned. So maybe it's because I like Frederick March so much as an actor. I don't know. But anyway, Frederick March in The Night Reveals.
Now, Autolite and its 60,000 dealers and service stations present...
Suspense! Tonight, Autolite brings you Frederick March in The Night Reveals, a suspense play produced and directed by Anton M. Leder.
Friends, for that Memorial Day trip, install an Autolite Stay Full battery in your car and relax. An Autolite Stay Full battery needs water only three times a year in normal car use.
Yes, sir, only three times a year.
Why, it makes a camel look like a drinking fountain.
And in addition, an Autolite Stay Full battery has extra plates for extra power.
Protected by fiberglass insulation for stronger life and longer life. In recent tests conducted according to the life cycle standards of the Society of Automotive Engineers, Autolite Stay Full batteries gave 70% longer average life than batteries without all these features. With an Autolite Stay Full battery, you need to add water only three times a year in normal car use.
So remember, you're right with Autolite.
And now, Autolite presents Frederick March in a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
I should have known before that something was wrong, gentlemen. You should have known by your eyes. It was a queer look, and staring at me one minute and avoiding me the next. Well, I came home late one Monday night, and they were asleep. My son Johnny, my wife here, Marie. I lay in bed reviewing my day's work. I'm an investigator for the Herkimer Fire Insurance Company. And while thinking about the fire on 2nd Avenue, I fell asleep. And suddenly, I was sitting bolt upright, wide awake, with a strange feeling of being alone in the room. I looked toward Marie's bed. It was too dark to see. I called, "Marie. Marie." No answer. Got up, walked to her bed. Quilt was bunched up. I pulled the covers down. The bed was empty. In the bathroom? No. She wasn't there. Not in Johnny's room, either. Johnny was alone. Marie wasn't in the apartment. I put on a light. I looked at my watch. It was 2 a.m. I got dressed and I walked out. Rang for the elevator. It was nothing, of course. It was nothing important, but my heart kept hammering away.
Morning, Mr. Jordan. Kind of late for you.
Yeah. Good morning, Steve. You see my wife get on?
Well, yes, Mr. Jordan, about half an hour ago, I'd say.
Oh, yeah, of course. You see which way she went?
Well, yeah, she went towards 3rd Avenue. Said she was going to the...
Yeah, went to the drugstore, I guess.
That's right. There's one over on 96th Street. Open all night.
Thanks, Steve. Ah, that was it. She went to the drugstore. I was worried over nothing at all. But I didn't know what to do quite. I didn't want to follow her, but the elevator boy was watching me, and so I strolled easily along towards 3rd. I stood on the deserted dark corner. I looked up and down the street. And then I saw her coming. She was walking toward me briskly.
Harry! What are you doing here?
Well, I got up and saw you were gone.
Oh, I just couldn't sleep. I had a dreadful headache, so I decided to go down for some aspirin.
Oh, yes. Yes, of course. The drugstore on 96th Street. Yeah, but... You were coming from 97th Street.
Oh, I took a little walk. I thought some fresh air would do me some good.
Yeah, it's a nice night.
I've only been gone about 10 minutes.
Steve says you were gone about a half hour.
It was only 10 minutes. What time is it now?
2:35.
I've been out for almost 15 minutes.
Oh, it's more than...
It was about 15 minutes. No more than that.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess so. Everything seemed all right, but still I felt something was wrong. We got into our apartment and we both went to bed. Just lay there. We didn't say anything.
Listen.
Huh?
A fire. A fire.
Yeah, not far. Over east a couple of blocks. By the river, I'd say. That's my district.
Fire.
Well, what the... Hello?
Hello, Mr. Hello, Harry. Sorry to wake in the middle of the night. There's a bad one over near you between 2nd and 3rd, maybe a total loss.
Between 2nd and 3rd, Mr. Palmer. An apartment building?
Yeah, 98th Street. Uh-huh. 340 East 98th. I called you because I'd like you to go there direct first thing in the morning instead of coming to the office. Uh-huh. Okay? I'll meet you there.
You're okay, Mr. Palmer. Good night.
A fire on 98th Street.
Yeah. Yeah. I couldn't see Marie in the dark, but I knew. I knew she was staring at me. I was very tired. Good night, Marie.
Good night, Harry.
For suspense, Autolite is bringing you Mr. Frederick March in radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense.
Hi, Hap. Say, this week I've been helping my brother-in-law get the car ready for Memorial Day.
For a whole week?
No. While he was pushing her up the driveway, I just told him no need to wear yourself to a frazzle. Just get a new Autolite Stay-Full battery. Needs water only 3 times a year in normal car use. Why, an Autolite Stay-Full battery has more liquid reserve than a camel with water on the knee.
Sure.
Yes, sirree, I told him. Forget those holiday worries. Just remember, the extra liquid reserve in an Autolite Stay-Full battery means less danger from evaporation. For real performance, just install an Autolite Stay-Full battery. Needs water only 3 times a year in normal car use.
And all that time, he was breaking his back pushing the car up the driveway?
About that time, he straightened up and gave me a dirty look. How was I to know he'd excited his sacroiliac again? And anyway, he shouldn't have anything but an Autolite Stay-Full battery in his car for long, trouble-free operation.
Did he tell you then he'd buy an Autolite Stay-Full battery?
He sure did, but emphatically.
Fine. And now, let's get back to suspense.
And now, Autolite brings back to our Hollywood soundstage Frederick March as Harry in The Night Reveals, a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
Well, the next morning, I went over to 98th Street to inspect the remains of number 340 and to see if there was evidence of anything suspicious about the origin of the fire. Mr. Palmer was there.
Yeah, there it is. Got it. Guess we'll be paying off on this one, all right?
Completely burned out. Anyone hurt?
A few, but no one dead. Lucky they just installed the new fire escape.
Just the walls left. Hey, that fire must have been quite a sight in the height of its glory.
Yeah, quite a sight. Say, those walls look pretty bad. Might collapse almost any time.
Yeah, the building will have to be raised. Gee, that fire did a good job.
Oh, there's the commissioner.
Hello, Parmenter.
Jordan.
Hi, Mr. Morrell.
Know anything about the fire, Commissioner?
No, not a thing.
Well, now that you're here, we'll take a look.
No, I wouldn't go in there, Jordan. Those walls...
Oh, I can take care of myself.
Maybe you'd better not go inside.
Don't worry about me. I know fires as well as anyone. You stay outside, Mr. Palmer. I'm going in. I went gingerly into the blackened, ruined hallway, ashes and debris up to my ankles, until I reached the remains of the stairway. Underneath were several baby carriages, just twisted pieces of metal. A burned fragment of something fell nearby.
Come on back, Jordan.
I'm all right. I poked around near the carriages, sifting through the fine, clean ashes. Something caught my eye. Blob of yellow metal. I picked it up, and then I worked my way out.
She's burned through, isn't she?
Yeah, clean through. Nothing left of her.
Did you find anything?
No, nothing much. Fire started in the hallway, all right. It worked its way up. Cellar's untouched.
What's that in your hand?
Oh, that's just a piece of metal I found. Here.
What do you think, Commissioner?
Yeah, it's probably one of those gadgets they have on baby carriages.
Yeah, I guess you're right. It isn't anything.
But it was something. I had run my fingernail across this glob of metal. It looked like gold. I would examine it in detail later at home.
Hello, Daddy.
Hello, how are you, Johnny?
Mama says I was bad today.
Harry, you're home early.
Yeah, I got through sooner than I expected.
What is it, Harry?
Your locket. You're not wearing it. You've never had it off before.
My locket? Well, I... Don't you remember?
Daddy, can I go over and see Davy Taylor for a minute?
Yeah, Johnny, go ahead.
All right. Gee, Daddy.
Well, you shouldn't have done that. I didn't want him to go. He hasn't had his dinner.
Never mind, Johnny. What'd you say happened to the locket?
Well, I gave it to you.
To me?
Well, I put it in your pocket to have it fixed. The catch was loose.
I don't remember.
I put it in your pocket, Harry. I forgot to mention it to you. I wanted you to take it to the jeweler's and get the catch fixed. I just put it in your coat pocket while you were shaving.
When?
Yesterday. Yes, yesterday morning.
Well, it should be in my pocket now. I wore this suit yesterday, too. Nothing in my pockets, Marie.
Well...
Marie.
Yes, Harry?
Is anything wrong with you?
I'm perfectly all right. Not a thing wrong with
me. You look worried, as if you'd got something on your mind.
It's nothing. I've just been having a headache.
Maybe you ought to see a doctor.
No. Really doesn't amount to much.
Well, I think I'll take another look for the locket. Which suit did you say you put it in?
Your blue suit, I think. Or maybe it was the gray, though.
I couldn't make it out. What had she done with the locket? Had she pawned it? She given it away? Then I remembered something. I went in the bathroom, locked the door. I looked at this shapeless little glob of yellow metal. I rubbed the blackened spots away until all of it was gleaming. I took a nail file out of the medicine chest and began to file it. I kept filing until I had enlarged the crack to the full length of the piece of gold. And I slipped the nail file inside and pried it open. Tiny fragments of glass, and then I saw a piece of scorched paper. It was a photograph. It was a picture of my son, Johnny. This glob of metal was my wife's locket. I put the locket and the picture in my pocket and walked out. All through dinner and afterwards, I watched her. She seemed very uneasy. Finally, I went over to my pipe rack, where I kept several books of matches in a jar. There weren't any there. And now I knew she was watching me closely. I looked behind the rack. There wasn't a match around. What the devil happened to all my matches?
I have a match. Here, let me light it for you.
Oh, did you take the matches out of the jar, Marie?
Well, I...
Did you?
Yes, I needed them in the kitchen. Shall I light your pipe for
no,
you?
No, I'll light it myself. I picked a match out of the booklet. It was a clean white match with a green head. I struck it against the side. The match spluttered up into a yellow flame, fringed on the bottom with blue. Marie stared at it until I felt the sharp bite of the flame on my thumb. Oh!
Burn yourself?
No, it's all right.
Would you like a nice hot cup of tea, Harry?
No, dear, I don't think so. I watched her. Her hand casually brushed along the table and picked up the matches. Marie!
Huh?
Leave the matches on the table.
I need them. I'm rather short of matches. The pilot isn't working.
Is this the only book of matches in the house?
I have to get some tomorrow. Where are you going, Harry?
Just get a drink of water.
No. No, I'll get it for you, Harry.
Never mind, Marie. I'll get it myself. I went into the kitchen. There was a paper bag alongside the gas range. Matches all thrown in helter-skelter. Books of matches and safety matches all mixed together. I walked back and sat down in my chair. You've been having headaches lately.
I'm just tired. That's nothing serious.
How'd you like to go away for a few days? Take a vacation. I'll get a maid to take care of Johnny and me. It'll do you a lot of good.
No. No, I don't need a vacation. There's nothing wrong with me. But, Harry, there is...
Yeah?
There's... Nothing the matter.
You were about to say something else.
I've got to go into Johnny's room and see that he's covered. He always throws the covers off.
I sat there looking after her, and then I glanced about the room. There was the pack of matches lying open on the table. I closed the cover. And then I noticed her purse lying nearby. It was bulging.
Harry!
What's the matter?
My purse!
Yes, your purse. Here, look. Full of matches. A dozen books of them. And these newspaper clippings.
Give it back to me!
Why are you saving these clippings? Why do you carry all these matches with you?
Well, I bought the matches in a store. A dozen for 5 cents.
And these newspaper clippings. Fire on 112th Street causes severe damage. And all these others. Why are you saving these clippings, Marie?
Why, there's nothing wrong in that. I'm interested in your work. I intend to keep a file on fires. It'll help you in your work.
That's very considerate, Marie.
Oh, Harry, you're so good. Why should this have to happen to us?
About midnight, I went to bed. Marie didn't follow me. I lay in the semi-darkness, wide awake, trying to think what I should do. Couldn't collect my thoughts. Every time I closed my eyes, I could see the flame of that match, yellow and blue, crawling along the matchstick.
Drink this, Harry. It'll help you sleep.
What is it?
It's cocoa. It's very good for you.
I'm not the one that's having trouble falling asleep.
We both couldn't sleep last night. I'm taking some of this myself as soon as I go to bed.
All right, leave it on the nightstand.
Well, be sure to drink it while it's hot.
Yes, Mary, I will.
Good night, darling.
Good night, Mary. Cocoa. And then suddenly I knew. I looked around quickly for something to pour it in. There was a radiator pan. It was empty. I poured the cup of liquid into it. Then I lay back and waited. I waited for her next move. About an hour later, I heard the door open softly and Marie tiptoed toward my bed.
Harry. Harry? Are you asleep?
I didn't answer, but breathed evenly. She hovered over me for a moment and she tiptoed out, carefully closing the door behind her. I jumped out of bed and hurried into my clothes. Quickly, I poured the cocoa from the pan into a bottle, put it in my pocket. And I grabbed my coat and I followed her. I rang for the elevator. She had only a few minutes headway. I'd catch up to her easily, and then we'd have a showdown. Steve looked at me with controlled amazement. Hello, Steve.
Hello, Mr. Jordan.
My wife went down a moment ago, didn't she?
Yes, Mr. Jordan, just took her down.
She went toward Third Avenue, didn't she?
I think so. She sort of stopped for a minute and then turned towards Third. I had to get back the elevator because you were ringing.
When I reached the corner, I looked up and down Third Avenue, and then I saw her. She was walking north. I crossed to the other side of the street and followed her, keeping at a distance. At 98th Street, she turned east. Down the middle of the block was the remains of last night's fire. She stopped in front of the gutted building. For a long time, just stood there, looking at it. Then she walked inside. I waited a few seconds, and then followed her. Marie!
Who's there?
It's me, Harry.
Harry! Why did you...
Come along, Marie. We'd better get out of here. The police. I took her hand. Without a word, she came along. We walked home in complete silence. We both knew. When we came to our apartment house, I stopped and rang for the elevator. In the light of the hallway, I could see her face, my wife's face, ashy gray, her eyes bright and painful. You run upstairs, Marie, and I'll be along in a minute.
Harry, where are you going?
I'll be right back.
Please, Harry, don't do anything.
You run along, Marie.
You're not going...
No. I'm only going to the drugstore to get something. I'll be back in a few minutes. I came home a half hour later. She was waiting for me.
Did you do it, Harry? Please, Harry, tell me. I've got to know.
I had the cocoa you gave me analyzed.
Oh, I'm sorry. I had to do it. Don't you see? I couldn't help it.
It's very easy for the druggist, especially when I told him what I thought was in it. That stuff that makes you sleep through an earthquake.
Please, try to understand, Harry. You must understand.
Is the kid asleep?
Uh-huh. Johnny's all right.
I was sorry for Marie. She looked so haggard and worn. It wasn't her fault. I was sorry for myself. My head was roaring. I wasn't feeling too well. I kept seeing sparks in front of my eyes. I closed my eyes for a moment.
Let's go to bed, Harry.
Marie, look, we can do something. Now, let's burn up every match in the house. We'll never bring another match in.
No! No, Harry, we can't do that.
You don't want to.
No, not now, Harry.
Strange, isn't it? Huh? That this should happen to me. Me, a fire inspector. That's funny. Give me the matches, Marie. All the matches.
No, I can't do that.
Give them
to me. I won't.
Me.
Please. Please don't take them. I'll do anything you want, anything.
Where did you hide them? Tell me, where are they?
Inside the range behind the paper bags.
I dropped her hand. She sank to the floor in a huddle, weeping. And then I went into the kitchen and got all the matches.
Please, Harry. Don't burn them up.
Harry, look. Look up. See? I'll light each book of matches one at a time until they've all gone up in smoke. The yellow flame licked its way down the matches. The cover caught fire and blackened. I watched her look at the flame with dazed eyes.
Listen! Listen, Harry! You hear?
Just someone in the hall.
It's more than someone. Something's happened. Something has happened.
I'll take a look.
The house is on fire!
Yeah, Marie, wake up Johnny.
Johnny! Johnny!
You'll have to hurry. The flames are coming up the stairs. There's an upward draft.
What's the matter, Mother?
The house is on fire. We've got to get out.
It's too late to go down. We'll have to go up through the roof.
Oh, I hurt my leg.
Come along, Johnny.
Mother, wait for Mother.
She'll come along.
No. Oh, no, I want to wait for Mother.
It's all right, Johnny. Go along with Daddy. I'll follow you.
No, I won't go. Oh. I won't go without you,
Hold on
Mother.
To my arm, Marie. Come on. Oh. Give me a hand, Johnny. Don't be scared. The fire won't hurt you. It won't hurt you at all. You're safe with me. We made our way upstairs. Very slowly because of Marie's sprained ankle. Finally, we got to the roof. There were some firemen on the next roof about 10 feet separated the two buildings.
Don't get panicky. We'll get you off safely.
Are we going to have to jump across, Daddy? Mother won't be able to jump. Her foot.
It's all right, Johnny. Don't be scared.
They're putting a board across between the two roofs. We'll just walk across.
All right, now. One at a time. Tie the rope around you and come across.
Johnny, you go first. Here. Don't be afraid. There. Rope will hold you in case you slip.
Mother, you gotta go first.
I'll go right after you. Johnny!
You promise?
Go ahead, Johnny. Mother will follow you. And don't turn around. I'll keep walking.
Oh. All right, the kid's safe. Now you, lady, be careful, the board.
Oh.
Hey, the board slipped off. Hurry, one of you guys, and get another board.
Coming up.
Mother, I want my mother.
Your mother's going to be all right.
You pushed the board off, Harry. I saw you do it.
No, I didn't, Marie. I didn't.
All right, mister. Just tie the rope around her. Now don't be afraid, lady. And don't look down.
All right.
Ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, boys. She's all right. Now you, mister.
All right.
Johnny.
That's right. Tie the rope around you. All set? Okay.
On the ground, we stood there, the three of us, watching the fire. Great flames shot out, stabbing at the sky. The top of the roof was burning now. A red flame crawled along, searching out the inflammable spots. And the wind was helping it. All this time, Marie was shaking violently, but not with cold. I pitied her. And then she threw up her hands and shrieked. No, darling,
don't. I can't stand it. We can't go on this way. Police! Police, come here!
Don't do it, Marie. There's no need to let the police. You don't know what you're saying.
Police!
What is it, lady?
Hey, you better calm down now, you.
Officer, pay no attention.
No, it's no use, Harry. Officer, these awful fires, they're not accidental. There's a pyromaniac, a criminal. I know who it is. You got to arrest the person. Arrest so there won't be any more.
All right, lady. What is this? Who is the pyromaniac?
The criminal is my husband, Harry Jordan. This man here. Arrest him.
Well, that's about all there is to the story, gentlemen. And then I was brought here. She must have sounded kind of, well, painful for you to hear it all over again, Marie.
No. It was all right, Harry.
I wonder, I got a cigarette. Could I,
No. I'll light it for you, Harry.
You don't have to worry. I won't try to keep the matches. She'd been awfully good to me, gentlemen. You'll take good care of her, won't you? She tried everything to help. Hid the matches so as to keep them from me. She even tried to give me sleeping pills so I wouldn't...
It's all right, Harry.
I'm sorry about the locket there. Must have fallen out of my coat when I was in that building at 98th Street.
It's all right, Harry. You can buy me another one. Sometime.
You can't blame anybody for liking fires. It's not their fault. Fires are beautiful to watch. So bright and clean. They burn up all the filth and dirt. They're magnificent to watch, especially the big ones. The way the flames roar and crackle, lighting up everything around you. The beautiful fire. The beautiful fire.
Thank you, Frederick March, for a splendid performance.
Say, Harlow, you and your brother-in-law are still friends?
Why, of course we're friends, Hap. We have so much in common. Both of us think an Autolite Stay Full battery is wonderful. Why, it needs water only 3 times a year, normal car use. And he appreciates the fact that Autolite Stay Full batteries are made by Autolite, the makers of over 400 products for cars,
trucks,
airplanes,
boats,
in 28 Autolite plants from coast to coast.
Yes, sirree, and Autolite also makes complete electrical systems for many makes of America's finest cars.
Batteries.
Spark plugs.
Generators.
Starting motors.
Coils.
Distributors.
All engineered to fit together perfectly, work together perfectly, because they're a perfect team.
The lifeline of your car.
So, folks, don't accept electrical parts that are supposed to be as good. Remember, you're always right with Autolite.
And now here again is Mr. Frederick March.
It's been a real pleasure appearing on Suspense tonight, working with this fine cast, especially Jeanette Nolan, who played Marie. And I'm looking forward with great interest to listening next week when radio's outstanding theater of thrills brings you Joan Crawford in The 10 Years. Another gripping study in...
Suspense!
Frederick March is soon to be seen with his wife, Florence Eldridge, in the new film, Christopher Columbus. Tonight's suspense play was adapted by Sigmund Miller from the story by Cornell Woolrich, with music composed by Lucian Morawick and conducted by Leith Stevens. The entire production was under the direction of Anton M. Leder. Next Thursday, same time, hear Joan Crawford in The 10 Years.
You can buy Autolite Stay-Full batteries, Autolite resistor spark plugs, Autolite electrical parts at your neighborhood Autolite dealers. Switch to Autolite. Good night.
This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Okay, so did you see that ending coming? Did you guess who the real pyromaniac was before it was revealed to you? Because that's what the night revealed. Did you guess? I don't know. I'll leave that to you listeners to either say it out loud or send me a little note saying, yes, I guessed ahead of time, or nope, they fooled me, or whatever. Anyway, Dr. Joe Webb, The Night Reveals. Anything else on this one?
No, I really don't have anything there. Just a reminder that so many of these stories are of their time. So the fear of fire is of that time. So many of these plots, if the writers were writing them today, cell phones would be part of them. But sometimes
yes, they would.
Phones aren't even part of the story because there's no access to a phone that they can get to. That sometimes in these stories, people are looking for a phone on the street to find a telephone booth or
yeah, telephone or booths. Boy, all the young people out there, do you know what a telephone booth is or was? Because there's very few of them still out there. You actually had to walk into a little booth. Superman would change his clothes
for privacy.
Superman would change his clothes in there, and you could dial after paying the operator the princely sum of 10 cents. You could dial a local call. And if you wanted long distance, you had to get that operator on the line, and you had to deposit all kinds of coins into that machine before you could make
That's exactly right. And also, so many of these stories, we're so used to having genetic-based forensics because of DNA technology. So a crime investigation was very, very different prior to those kinds of issues.
Oh, and much more difficult to prove as well.
Oh, yeah. And also, and this is kind of related to something, but if you're ever watching a vintage movie on DVD or Blu-ray only, please.
Yes, thank you.
You'll notice that the crime scene investigators don't have latex gloves. They don't have bags that they're putting each piece of evidence in and all that.
Nope.
So you have to put yourself in the time of these stories to understand why they were significant and the kinds of things that the writers like Woolrich were reproducing in their prose.
Oh, very good. Well, I have one last thing to do, and that is to say, and that is to plug a film, since we're bringing up film. Frederick March, the star of this particular show, was the original Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde in the 1932 film of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. And it was one of those pre-code films that, if you haven't seen it, is quite astounding today. Have you seen that one, Dr. Joe?
A long time ago.
Oh, well,
I was much younger.
I'm going to encourage you to go out and get the Blu-ray restoration of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, because you can see it in all its glory in beautiful, crystal clear, restored film. And it is an astounding thing to watch. There have been several versions of it, including one with Abbott and Costello, if you want a humorous version.
Sure.
Several versions of that famous story filmed, but the ultimate weird, strange one is the original Frederick March, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. And people would assume it was a Universal horror movie, and it has all the elements of that, but it was not made by Universal. But it's interesting to see a 1932 film that is that far advanced. Producer Daniel, have you seen it? It made him uncomfortable, he says. Yeah, well, there's reasons why if you watch it.
Yeah.
So there's my little tease for that, but it's a fabulous film. So I'm always happy to hear anything with Frederick March in it.
I need to make a correction. If that first production of Night Reveals on Suspense back from March 1943 is ever found, it stars Frederick March, not
Robert Young. Oh, interesting. Okay, because I heard the first one I heard was Robert Young.
Yes. So thank you, Keith Scott, and your suspense log,
yeah,
of which there are links to in the show notes.
Well, link to Keith Scott's log if you're interested in more stuff on suspense. And of course, Dr. Joe, don't you have an online thing you can link to or talk about?
Yes, in the show notes, you will see my suspense blog, where we analyze an individual episode every single day.
Yeah, boy, you're dedicated to do that. And I've read some of those, and they're pretty darn interesting. They're just like you are here on this show. You give all the details and all the backstories and all the everything. We're just doing a live version of it. Well, pre-recorded version of it here on the good old
but
days.
But we were live at the time we recorded
we were
it.
We better hope we were. Anyway, so check out that. How do they find that?
They go into the show notes or they go to the Suspense Project blog site, which is suspenseproject.blogspot.com. Sorry, blogspot.com. Suspenseproject.blogspot.com.
Suspenseproject.blogspot.com. Now, that's a mouthful, but if they got it, and we repeated it several times, if they got it, that's where they go to hear... or not to hear, to see kind of written versions of what we've been doing here on the Good Old Days Radio Show for the last 6 weeks.
And lots more.
And wait, there's more.
All right. So now next week, next week things turn funny.
Yeah, it's a show that I remember transferring years ago and didn't remember particularly caring for when I did, but then I didn't realize it was supposed to be a comedy until well into it.
And you know
it.
What? A lot of the Woolrich aficionados don't like it.
Ah, okay. So,
but I love it.
With that intro, I will just say that it stars Agnes Moorehead. And since I said I could listen to Agnes Moorehead read the phone book, or as you said,
Agnes Moorehead scream the phone book.
Yes. Either way, Agnes Moorehead, one of the great, great voices of early radio and even into television, et cetera, and film. But radio was her shining star. Agnes Moorehead will be in this, and it's another Cornell Woolrich story. So we will be back next week with that. And thank you so much, Dr. Joe Webb, for your contributions to the Good Old Days of Radio Show. And we'll see you all next week.